Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on the biggest NBA news and hear from the stars on and off the court on the Woj Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinnaye Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today. 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about what happened with Henry Ruggs and your stories of people lying like Aaron Rodgers. But first, hey, man, so I went to go see my parents this weekend, but the internet situation at the crib ain't the greatest. So I wind up, you know, flying out early on Sunday to get back home so that I could have access to my full on Sunday ticket so that I could be prepared to do this podcast with you wonderful people. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's very important to me that you understand. I be watching these games. I be actually looking at them with my own eyes. I want you to know I'm not just taking the word of somebody else. I be getting to the bottom of it. And let me tell you what I got to the bottom of Sunday. A bunch of bullshit, man. What a bizarre, strange weekend of football on so many levels. So many people wasn't out there playing. So many games just looked kind of mediocre. So many people just came out here and decided to stink up the joint. Although Adrian Peterson, Gabe, back in the league, 36 years old. This dude was the starter, 36 years old. And you know what he looked? He looked really good to be 36 years old. But 36 years old. When these dudes keep on holding on, the answer is usually the same. Not always. I'm talking about holding on. Like, Tom Brady isn't holding on, right? Like, Tom Brady's still balling. I'm talking about still holding on. And they hold on for the same reason that other dude you know still out there working. Because them bills ain't going to pay themselves. That's why. Hey, man, I ain't trying to shade that dude. I'm just telling you that's what it is. But he was out there. To put that in perspective for you, Gabe, Adrian Peterson was drafted in the same draft as Calvin Johnson, who is currently in the Hall of Fame. You got to be retired for 5 years to get into the Hall of Fame. Adrian Peterson, still out here playing football. But anyway, this was one of those weekends where it allows me to go around the league and just kind of look at how it is that we decide that we're going to talk about quarterbacks and who we holding on for and who we give up on. So I talk about that Titans game. It was the Titans and the Rams, and the Rams got the brakes beat off of them. The Titans went out there and put that hurt on them. And Matthew Stafford, I don't do quarterback wins as a statistic, right? So I'm not going to be unfair to him about the fact that I think I saw the stat that said that his teams are 9-59 against teams with winning records. Matthew Stafford's been in the NFL for 12 years and change, 9 wins against teams with winning records for his teams. And I try to be clear about that for his teams thing again, because I don't do quarterback wins. However, you do kind of think that every now and then for a quarterback to be of the talent level of Stafford and the caliber that y'all swear, even though it's year 13, that at some point he'll be able to get to, that just on the strength of you, you'd be able to get a little something done, right? Like, that's what you would think, just on the strength of, hey, we got Matthew Stafford. You could have won a few more of those games. I know that you played for the Lions. You weren't totally out there by yourself playing for the Lions for whatever it's worth. But I get it. You were playing for the Lions. it wasn't all Stafford's fault in this game. Again, to be clear, he was the life of the party, man. That dude, Jeffrey Simmons, was like, I want to be on TV a lot. And he was. And the way to get there was by wrapping your arms around Matthew Stafford. But there was that play in that first half where he threw that interception, where he's wrapped up basically in the end zone, and he just made a stupid play that you would expect a young quarterback to make, where he just, in the middle of the pocket, tried to throw it away and threw it right at somebody. But it's year 13, and people are looking at Matthew Stafford like, you know what? This is the year that it's all going to come together. Y'all know I've been telling him jokes about, what's his name, Darren McFadden for all them years, about, oh, this is the year it all comes together. Do you realize that Darren McFadden was drafted just 1 year before Matthew Stafford and has been out the league, but people are still holding out hope that this is going to be a year that Matthew Stafford puts it all together? Like, we're still there with a dude like that, and I've talked about this before on this podcast. I've talked about it honestly for years. I really first caught wind of this when Cam Newton first came into the league. Stafford is the least scrutinized number one overall pick in the history of the NFL. All right. Now, maybe you could say somebody like Eric Fisher, right? Like maybe one of those guys, like position player types, like maybe you can go there, but definitely as far as quarterbacks go, the least scrutinized number one overall pick that there's ever been. Because for whatever reason, people don't want to scrutinize him. And it's wild. So take a guy like Joey Harrington, for example. And don't get me wrong, Stafford is definitely a better player than Joey Harrington was. I don't want to get any dispute about what the point is I'm making here. I'm just saying that Joey Harrington never got any, well, you know, he plays for the Lions slack. That never happened. Never came up, right? Because at some point, you just kind of are what you are. And with Stafford, he's a dude with a big arm. That's it. Like, I haven't seen much of anything else that there is to discuss, or that there is to describe. But after watching Lamar Jackson, and I watched a decent bit of that game on Sunday, after watching Lamar Jackson, seeing Stafford and the way we treat him just really jumps out. And so when I talk about it jumping out, I mean, I don't think there's any argument right now that Lamar Jackson is the MVP in the NFL this year. So far, I just don't think that there's anybody else that you can go to, because the receiving core isn't much better than it has been. The running back room got decimated at the start of the year, and they had to go jump in the time machine and go get Devontae Freeman and Le'Veon Bell to try to figure out how to make this thing work. You watch those games with the Ravens, it's like high school in the sense that they're like, what we've got is the quarterback who's the best athlete on the field. And so literally everything is going to be about that. Every single bit of it. Like, it's like Pop Warner. It's like all those other levels where you just wind up with one kid who's so much better than everybody else. And so you find a way to leverage that one kid on everything. Except this dude is doing this while being surrounded by NFL players playing against NFL defenses. And he stepped up and he's done all the stuff that people said he could not have done. Right. I think I saw something today that said that the Ravens thus far have come back from being down double digits three times this year. Prior to this, with Lamar Jackson, that quarterback, the Ravens had been 0-6 under those circumstances. And remember, the whole talk was, well, you know, the problem with Lamar, you can't come from behind with him. OK, kind of hard for you to say that now, right? Like, that's become a much, much more difficult point. With Lamar Jackson, we're talking about a dude who right now is 24 years old, right? As we speak. He is 24 years old. He has won an MVP. I don't have the record off the top of my head since he became the starting quarterback in Baltimore, but you can go look it up. It's pretty damn impressive. And at just about every turn, somebody was out here trying to figure out what wasn't there. Oh, well, you know, haven't gotten it done in the playoffs. So, okay, right? So we got that one, right? Haven't gotten it done in the playoffs. They won a playoff game last year. Well, they haven't gone deep into the playoffs. Okay, so here's this weird thing about the playoffs. Not very many teams go deep in them. That's the point. They eliminate teams along the way. It's how it goes, right? But so many people were ready to make definitive conclusions about Lamar Jackson before he even turned 25. Matthew Stafford's in his 13th year in the league, and people still crossing their fingers, hoping it all winds up coming together. Now, the truth is, Quarterback as a position in the NFL comes with a measure of ebb and flow that doesn't happen really at any other position in the league. Like, the thing about the NFL, generally speaking, is, and I understand why people do this with every position basically but quarterback, there ain't, he just had a bad year this year. Like, in baseball, you get that, but you ever notice that with basketball? It ain't very often that somebody pops up and you're just like, yo, he's really good, but he just had a bad year. He'll turn it around next year. That's not really how it works anywhere in football, except for quarterback, because I guess there's just so many variables and so many things that can come up. That can't happen there, right? Like, that can be a thing with football. And with quarterbacks, this absolutely comes up. And Patrick Mahomes seems to be having one of those years this year, right? It ain't all coming together like it had before. Defenses have absolutely made an adjustment to the way that the Chiefs play, and the Chiefs haven't quite figured out how they're going to manufacture big plays against those two high coverages, or how they're going to do it without manufacturing big plays. They haven't gotten there. And Mahomes is pressing and not playing well. Like, there's no way around it. He's not playing well. But I'm being dead up about this. Go look up basically every quarterback worth a damn that's ever played in the NFL. You can just go pick your insert Hall of Famer here. Look it up. There's a year like this. For Peyton Manning, it was year 4, as I recall, that he came up and you looked at him like, yo, what's going on here? But it happens to just about all these guys. And I saw some measure of discussion as this started about it that was on some, well, I think the NFL has figured out Patrick Mahomes. Coaches coach against coaches, man. Like, if there's anybody that's being figured out, it's Reed and Eric. Damn, I should have took a job last year, Bieniemy, except it don't look like they was offering him once. But anyway, that's how it goes. They catch up to the other coach because they're going against each other. And then at some point, we see what it is that everybody can cook up. But to me, I don't think it's a matter of do you figure out Patrick Mahomes, no more than I think that there's any matter of Buffalo looking terrible against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Josh Allen looked dreadful. Well, correction. Josh Allen looked awesome. The one that plays for the Jaguars. The one who plays for the Bills. Not so much. Now, I understand that some of y'all are under the mistaken impression that I'm a hater and that would use this opportunity to bag on the quarterback, Josh Allen. But no, that would be ridiculous. These things happen from time to time. Their offensive line wasn't bringing it. They had no running game other than Josh Allen, right? But if Josh Allen puts out a couple of these, y'all gonna come out here and start telling me about how people have figured out Josh Allen? No, because you don't think Josh Allen is a gimmick. You thought Lamar Jackson was a gimmick. A bad month for Patrick Mahomes, and now all of a sudden, we're going to treat him like he's a gimmick. And nah, I don't see it that way. I really, really don't. Like, as I think about all of this, that's just not the way that I happen to see it. There's going to be ups and downs, and our conclusions about quarterbacks are always going to be in the macro. And it's so crazy when we do this week to week. Baker Mayfield, after Odell got out of there, the Browns looked pretty good against the Bengals. They put up, I want to say, 34 points on offense because they had a, a pick six that gave them 7 points. So 6+ extra point, you know what I mean. And they did that. But Baker Mayfield, at least from what I see, is just kind of who he is, right? He all right. He ain't bad. He ain't just turned into some new dude. But like every week in the NFL, either we got a new week to change everything we're saying, or we just looking for a reason to go back to what we already thought before. Right. And you may be thinking that's what I'm doing with Baker Mayfield. That's fine. I understand that. But that's just where we wind up going. It ain't that simple, man. It's just a matter of who are you willing to hold out slack for? Right. Who are you willing to give a measure of patience to? And that tends to come down to whether or not you want to be right about a particular thing. Right. That's where we are. That's where we get. That's how we play this game. Probably not the best way to put it or best way to do it. Probably not. I would just like to say one thing before we go, as I've given you my NFL observations. Gabe, people think I still root for the Falcons. Did you know that?
It does come up from time to time.
I just don't know why they won't believe it. Like, when I jump back on the Braves in this run, I told you I was jumping back on the Braves, right? I've never told you I was jumping back on the Falcons. I'll never jump back on the Falcons. Like, that's just not, I'm out of that. I'm not doing that.
You know what I kind of notice is that it's almost a little LA with the fandom. Where if the team's worthy of you jumping back on the bandwagon, you might consider it.
But I see why you would say that, but not really, right? When the Falcons were making the run to the Super Bowl, I never jumped back on.
That's a good point.
Yeah, like I said, I never jumped back on. I didn't jump back on when they got the big lead. Thank goodness. I never jumped back on. The Braves, I got a different sort of feeling about it. It's a different set of circumstances, everything else. I did get back on that. But with the Falcons, I don't get back on that. I just don't. But I'm not going to stop hating the Saints. Like, I'm not going to let the Falcons take that away from me. I don't know why y'all don't get it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to let them rob me of that level of joy. And the Saints came out there and thought they had got their comeback win. Matt Ryan brought them back the other way. And I'm just telling you, Saints fans, right now, it's okay to get back on what you used to be on sometimes. You can do that. You can. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about them paper bags. You know what I'm saying? Got you a little Super Bowl. I understand that. Had you a decent run of relative success over the course of the years. I feel that. But it's okay. There's no shame in it. No shame in the paper bag. There's some shame in showing your face after the Saints lose to the Falcons because the Falcons are sorry. There's some shame in that. But in the paper bag, I can't stop you from trying to preserve your dignity. So I'm just asking all of y'all just to understand. Bo Jones care. If don't nobody else care. Go ahead and put that paper bag on. And still wear your mask, though. The paper bag isn't going to save you from the elements. You know what I'm saying? It ain't going to save you from what's out here in the air. None of that. Put the bags on, baby. Y'all, from here on out, y'all going to put up a lackluster performance. They was hitting me. We 5-3, and we got the backup. See, that's the thing. Now you got the backup. Y'all going to be sorry for the rest of the year. And I'm going to love every minute of it. And you're going to try to come back at me and say something about the Falcons. I don't root for the Falcons. I am bulletproof. There is nothing you can do to me. You're going to be over there feeling like losers all by yourself.
Who that lost to them Falcons?
So Aaron Rodgers turned into villain, but of course, the number two villain of the week from the NFL, because the only answer for number one was Henry Ruggs. And I almost feel like silly calling Ruggs a villain in that way, because this is just so much deeper than like how we're going to characterize a person, right? Like coming up with a name for it or anything, or to fit our ideas of how we talk about sports. Like that's what happened there is far more significant than that. And when things come up, like what happened with Ruggs. So for me, as a professional commentator or commenter or whatever it is, right? Whatever the term is that you use for the job that I do. I think it is incumbent upon me and like important for me and, you know, what separates me from the others, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm really not trying to tell you something that somebody else can, right? Like, I'm really not trying to tell you something that you already know. I hate platitudes, right? Like, there's nothing that drives me crazier than platitudes. Like, people coming out acting like they dropping bombs when they saying something that is, like, readily obvious. And what happened with Ruggs, there's nothing really interesting to say about it. There's nothing that you need me truly to tell you about what happened with Henry Ruggs. It's all pretty cut and dry. The dude had 18 drinks and then drove his Corvette 156 miles an hour, not on the freeway, but on a city street, hit a woman. She died stuck in her car on fire. There's nothing interesting for me to say about that. There's nothing compelling there. Everything is obvious. And so what happens in our game when something like that goes down, and there are many other examples of stories that I could give you on this, where once there's nothing really interesting to say, people still feel like they have to say something, right? They still feel like they have to make some measure of comment on a story like the one with Ruggs. But since there's only really one thing truly to say, all there is to do is be outraged and to express your outrage. And if you really want to differentiate yourself, you ramp up your outrage And as the outrage then gets ramped up, if you want to prove that you have a problem with drunk driving, then you got to ramp up your outrage too, right? And that's not to say that what Henry Ruggs did not merit some measure of outrage. It obviously does. But I'm not going to pretend like I know him or I know anybody else that's involved in this. Like, Ruggs is not a dude who, like, every NFL fan has some kind of opinion on. I would not say that he is a famous person, right? Like, you probably couldn't have picked Henry Ruggs out of a lineup before you saw him in court. Like, this isn't a dude who, for most of you, has let you down, who has betrayed you, who has come up short from what you expected from him to begin with. You know what I mean? Like, that's not the sort of person that we have here. And so when I see, like, a certain level of public outrage, I understand where it comes from, and I don't blame people for being upset in the ways that they are, but it's not me. Like, I'm not in that place because I generally have a problem with what it is. And I'll be honest with you, I ain't never driven a car 156 miles an hour. And I'm pretty sure that the only reason I've never driven a car 156 miles an hour is because when I was in my 20s, I didn't have a car that could go 156 miles an hour. Like, when I hear stories about young people driving really fast and getting into car accidents, like, it brings like a chill across me. It brings it to a very personal place, not because I've been in a terrible accident at a high speed, but because I have done incredibly stupid things behind the wheel of a car, right? Sober, mind you, right? Driving way too fast in places that I shouldn't have, in situations that at the time I didn't think about it, but man, they could have just turned out terribly for me and for other people. Like, I just have a general thing about young people and driving really fast in cars. And I think a lot of us can look back at our lives driving fast in cars and think about times that we really, really could have wound up in a terrible place. And like, when I see something like that, what happened with Ruggs, I do think about myself, because I know, for the grace of God, however you want to put it, I can't say I wouldn't have been in that situation. Now, would I have been in the 18 drink situation? No, I probably would have died before it got to that part. Like, I don't have that. But like, for me, I do have that feeling when I see something like that. But I want people to just think about something when it comes to the outrage. Derek Carr came out and said that he's still going to be there for Henry Ruggs and that Henry Ruggs needs people to love him. And I was struck by that with Carr, because Carr, in effect, said something very similar about John Gruden after John Gruden had gotten caught up. And he was saying that he thinks John Gruden is a good man and he wants to, you know, be there for John Gruden as he needs it or whatever. I didn't like the way it sounded when he said that about John Gruden, but I recognize that with Carr and, you know, the way his Christian faith is set up, that's him. That's his get down. He seems to be true to that stuff. You know what I mean? That's what he does. That's how he goes about it. And I really respect him for it. And I talked about it on Twitter in the context of forgiveness, and it's really compassion. Forgiveness wasn't the right term. I think I was doing a certain measure of projection about things in my own life when I used the term forgiveness, but compassion is probably the right term. And I can understand people in a case like Henry Ruggs not having compassion that they can offer to him. But what I don't understand is people who judge those who are able to offer compassion. Like, for me personally, a vengeful spirit is nothing to be proud of. That's just to me. Like, those things don't feel good to me. I don't feel like they bring out like what is best about me. And I honestly don't believe that you feel that way about yourselves. You know, like, when people talk about the satisfaction that they get from getting somebody back or whatever it is, I mean, I really, like, ask yourself, are you truly satisfied when you do that? Like, do you feel better on the back end? And I just don't think that most people do. I don't. My mother and I were having a conversation many years ago, really about forgiveness and about somebody in my life in that regard. And she wants me to forgive that person. She badly wants me to forgive that person for me. You know, like, she wants me to let that go so that I don't have that burden in my life anymore. I don't have that hanging over me. I am the winner from letting that go. And she's right. And I know that because I can't let it go. And it doesn't do me a single bit of good to hold on to it. And that's with somebody that I know personally. I just don't so much have it in me. I look at a dude like Carr with such respect in a time like this because he's right. Somebody got to be there for that, man. Look, man, there's a reason why they got visiting rooms in prison. And ain't nothing in the prison for the prisoner. It's for the world. It's for that person's family. You know, it's for everybody else. Because at some point, them dudes going to get out of jail and they got a life that they got to get into. You know, like that's the benefit that you get from that is what they're going to be when they come back into the world. That's what all these things are. Like, that's a huge part of the process that we're talking about here. And like, I see the level of outrage toward Ruggs. And again, I don't blame you for the outrage, but you do understand he's going to jail for a long time, right? If you didn't think he was going to jail for the drunk driving and for the person dying, a dog died and he had a loaded gun. Don't you worry. That dude is going to jail. And just so you know, that dude that's going to jail, I happened to meet somebody this week who was one of his teachers in high school. That dude was very clear that whatever he gets and is deserved. But he was heartbroken because he said for Ruggs to get to where he got to from where he started, it required him to do everything right. You know, he described him as one of these cats that came from one of these places and one of these families where the outcomes were negative for just about everybody. He had to do it all right to get to where he did. And he did it all right until he didn't do it all right. Like, his life's over. He done, right? Like, what he thought it was going to be and everything else, it's a wrap on that for that dude. Don't you worry. The feeling that you have inside and your anger toward Henry Ruggs, somebody going to take care of that for you. You don't need to worry about that part. It will be dealt with. But if that were your people, you telling me you'd quit them? Because I can tell you on that one, I would not. Like, if that was somebody I was really close with, I would not. Because in the end, that is a person that's going to need somebody. That is a person who I believe is still worthy of love. And even if it ain't from you, that's fine. But don't judge nobody else for being there for that person. Because you know how hard it is to be there for that person because you're not capable of it. And I'm not judging you for not being capable of it. I'm just telling you, you know that you're not capable of it. But I think you also know somebody does have to do it. Partially for Ruggs, but also largely for whatever he's going to be when he gets out of there. Because they're not going to keep him in forever. At some point, he's going to be out of there. Or for what he's going to be while he's in there. A place that works to strip your humanity and strip your dignity from you. What you're going to hope is that he's a human being on the way out. And human beings have to be loved. Human beings need somebody to be there for them, to think about them, to consider them. That is what human beings need. And a cat like Derek Carr decided, or at least he said, that he's going to be a person to do it. And I respect him for that. And I respect the fact that many of you can't get there. But I was stunned by how many people were outraged by the idea that someone would want to be there for the dude. You know, and I think that the way that we deal with prison and all this stuff and this, you know, this carceral state that we live in, even people who disagree with it have come to the point where they believe that once you make a mistake like that, that you are beyond redemption. And we can't do that. Like, I'm just telling you, there are some things that I think that you could say that about. I don't think this one is that one. You know, like, I don't think that we're dealing with like some hardened criminal who has just been a widespread menace to society. I don't think that's what we're dealing with here. That's not the guy I think is here. And so credit to Derek Carr. I honestly wish that I could be more like you. If you haven't heard, it's part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper. College football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from music.
So a diverse class inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last week at the Rocket Mortgage Arena Fieldhouse in Cleveland. Tina Turner, Carole King, the Go-Go's, Foo Fighters, Billy Preston, Jay-Z, and LL Cool J for musical excellence, celebrating his influence on hip-hop. Let's go to Sean Carter first, all right? Hova, the Jigga Man, Jay-Z to, you know, mere mortals like me. I love this induction for so many reasons. Firstly, because Jay is the genuine article and he makes no apologies, you know, about where he's from, his upbringing, his journey to get to this place in history. This was the kid from Brooklyn who sold CDs out of his car because he didn't have a record deal, right? Back then, later, of course, founding Rockefeller Records with Kareem Burke and Damon Dash, which really started Jay's, you know, sort of turn out of that tough existence to his debut album, Reasonable Doubt. And then along comes a string of hits, and he goes out on top with the Black Album, right? But then comes back again with Kingdom Come. Oh, yeah, almost forgot. What, he becomes president of Def Jam Recordings, starts Rocka Clothing, Rock Nation, Rockefeller Films, his interests in Tidal, the Brooklyn Nets. The portfolio is expansive. And in turn, so is Mr. Carter's effect when you think about it on hip-hop and the culture. Now, let's go to LL Cool J, all right? I want to point this out. He touched on something very interesting backstage. Every year when a hip-hop artist is inducted into the Rock Hall, we have that debate. Does hip hop belong here? The Rock Hall now, I think it's become more about, I don't know, the spirit, I think, of what rock and roll is that I think lends credibility to hip hop artists being enshrined into the Rock Hall. And if you think about it, rock and roll is that force that inspires change and rebellion, right? Listen, it wasn't so long ago that TV cameras couldn't show Elvis from the waist down. You know what I mean? Our parents were forbidden to going to these rock shows because some thought it inspired sin, change in thought, rebelling against, you know, morality and the norms of the time. They didn't think it would last. They didn't think hip hop would last when DJ Kool Herc and Afrika Bambaataa started throwing down on the ones and twos back in the day. And then suddenly Run DMC and Grandmaster Flash start selling out gigs in places like the Ritz here in New York City. And here we are now. Run DMC and Flash are both in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as LL Cool J and Jay-Z.
It is ridiculous that LL Cool J was not the first solo rapper to make it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I understand, like, for example, Gabe and I, we got about a 12-year age difference. LL Cool J means something completely different to somebody your age than my age. You can't understand. Bucket hat and gold chain LL Cool J. Oh my God, he's so good. You can make an argument that if you were building it, like carving an MC out from granite from that time period, LL Cool J was everything that you could ask for, right? Like he was one of those dudes where it was like the girls wanted to be with him and the dudes wanted to be like him. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like he was on some old in your face gangster type stuff because he's like, you know, relatively middle class from Hollis. Like it wasn't that. But there was always the edge was still there. You know what I mean? Like he ain't look like no sucker, nobody you want to try while also not being in your face. Like, yo, you want to, you got a problem with that? Like not even that sort of dude. And he could legitimately rap his ass off. Like really, 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 really good at rap just all by itself. But the whole vibe and everything else about him, he was it. It. The first for real solo superstar in rap. And I think he wound up getting into Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in a way. So they had a rule at the University of Texas that they would retire your jersey if you won a Heisman Trophy or National Player of the Year in basketball. So Kevin Durant won National Player of the Year that one year he was at Texas. And then people are like, hold on, this dude was here only one year. And so then with that, they were like, oh, okay. And so they retired Vince Young's jersey too, for example. You know what I mean? Just because, like, if you're going to retire Kevin Durant's jersey, you got to retire Vince Young's. And I think that people looked around and realized, okay, we already let Pac in. If we were going to do this with Jay-Z, then now's the time to bring LL Cool J in, right? Like, that's how I think he wound up getting in. But I just don't think a whole lot of people of a certain age range realize you can make an argument that LL Cool J is the greatest rapper who ever lived. Like, that's not where I'm going with it necessarily, but you could make an argument that he is that dude. And please, please, please do not ever forget that. I just like, if there's anything for me to tell you right now, do not ever forget that LL Cool J was 100% that dude. Even if his steez wasn't even the steez that you wanted to rock with, he was 100% that dude.
This next story also comes from music.
This is Stephanie Walsh with ABC News. There are still many unanswered questions following the tragedy at Travis Scott's AstroWorld Festival on Friday night. Nearly 50,000 fans were packed into NRG Park to see the Houston native perform, when authorities say the crowd began to surge toward the front of the stage, leaving at least 8 people dead and 25 injured. The youngest injured just 10 years old. Arturo Sanchez told ABC he was knocked down, on the floor screaming for help, trying to reach for people's hands. He suffered a heart attack and briefly flatlined, doctors told him. He said a registered nurse in the crowd saved his life by doing chest compressions on him, raising his legs and helping get him to an ambulance. Another concert goer suing Scott, Live Nation, and show organizers in a $1 million lawsuit on Sunday after allegedly suffering broken ribs and multiple broken bones, referencing chaos at other Travis Scott concerts. Scott was arrested in 2015 on charges of inciting a crowd to jump barriers at Lollapalooza in Chicago. In 2017, he was arrested again after he invited fans at a show in Chicago to come closer to the stage, prompting them to breach barricades and overrun security. He pled guilty in both cases to disorderly conduct charges and paid fines. Houston's mayor said there will be a thorough criminal investigation into what happened at the concert, as we learn more about some of the 8 victims. John Hilgert, 14, a high school freshman. Axel Acosta, 21, who had traveled from Washington to see Scott perform. Brianna Rodriguez, 16, a high school junior with a passion for dance. Franco Patino, 21, a senior at the University of Dayton in Ohio. Jacob Jake E. Jurinek, a junior at Southern Illinois University. Danish Baig, 27. His brother Basil told ABC he died trying to save his fiance. In a statement to ABC News, he wrote, "Travis Scott and his team and everyone associated in the event should and will be held responsible." Travis Scott and Live Nation have stated that they are working with authorities.
All right, so Gabe, are you familiar with the Altamont free concert?
I am not.
All right, so Altamont was obviously a free concert that was held in 1969. Rolling Stones were the headliners, and it all went bad. Like, it's a legendary thing where I think the Guardian Angels were doing security or something, and that didn't go well. Somebody drowned, like, had a bad trip and drowned. Somebody was stabbed to death at the concert, but it was nearly enough to ruin the Rolling Stones in 1969, right? It was nearly enough to take them all the way down. And 3 people died at that concert, I want to say. 8 people dead at Travis Scott, and people who were missing and waiting to notify families and everything else. Like, it might be a wrap for him. Like, as a front-facing performer, it might be over. And a big part of why it might be over is he built the brand on chaos. You know, like, what he was selling and what he has been selling for these concerts is chaos. And he's talking about ragers and all of this stuff, right? Like, this state of pandemonium is what the brand is for him and what he absolutely has encouraged from the stage. And this happened to him in an era where everybody had those cameras. And so we get snapshots of what was going on in the crowd that are just chilling, right? Like, the people going up being like, "Stop the show. People are dying," and nobody doing it. Now, like, that one clip I saw, to be fair, the person she was telling that to, I don't know what power he had to stop the show, right? Like, I don't know what exactly it was that he was going to do. But the images and pictures of Travis Scott, like, while people are being carried out and he's on stage and still going, and I doubt that he could see a thing with the way lights were set up and everything. But this is yours. Like, you brought this to your hometown, and this all happened on your name, on your watch. I really am not sure how exactly you recover from this as an act of the stature and caliber that he has reached. I really, really, really don't know. Because what concert are you supposed to have after this? Like, if this is what you've always built this around, is everybody wilding out? Where do you go from here? I have absolutely no idea where it is. And so there's some particulars to this that I don't think are quote unquote his fault, like, as a person, but as the person in charge, the entity and the party that you decided to throw, the event that you had, you didn't have the right people there. They were not prepared to deal with what was going on. And there was not one person in your whole operation who was in a position to look up and be like, "Yo, turn the lights on. We got to shut this down." There was not one person who was there for that. And ain't nobody got an answer to that but Travis Scott, right? There's going to be a whole lot of people get sued. They gave out refunds to people who were at the concert. What are you? You might as well keep that money. You're going to need to pay that out to some people. You know, like, what are you fixing by giving somebody a refund? You're going to send a check to the families of the dead people? Like, just so you know, we took care of their tickets. that's what told me, oh, this is bad. They have no idea what to do here. They have no clue whatsoever for what there is for them to do. And all you can really do, we are sorry. We made a terrible mistake. Like, you can try to get out here, try to play it cool for the lawyers, try not to admit guilt, and that's fine. But I'm telling you, I don't know how much of a career it's reasonable to expect for him to have after this. I can't think of a concert situation more tragic than this one, given that I just gave you that this was worse than Altamont. I don't have anything for you.
All right, this last story comes from Tech.
If you dreamed of getting rich by chasing a crypto coin named after, but not licensed by, Netflix's hit Squid Game, it looks like you'll have to find someone giving away the show's creepy little cards in real life. The Squid Coin rocketed up tens of thousands of percent in value 2 weeks ago, but by trading Monday of last week, it was worth zilch. According to experts who spoke with Markets Insider, it looks like investors have been had and scammers walked away with millions. The coins were at one point worth north of $2,861 apiece before falling to basically zero last Monday morning. The coin's value fell faster than one of the show's contestants through a glass bridge. The scam has completed its cycle and the price has just dropped significantly, co-founder of CoinGecko Bobby Ong told Insider. The coin seemingly came out of nowhere 2 weeks ago and was being advertised as part of an upcoming online game called the Squid Game Project. The crypto was reportedly created to play it and would have been at stake as prizes, its creators said online. However, after the coin spiked in value, the website was disconnected and you couldn't trade the stuff once you bought it. Investors were already smelling something was off with the coin before the bottom fell out, mostly because all traces back to the game vanished.
Look, man, all I'm trying to tell you is investment is not a fad. You feel me? And I'm not talking about the general fad right now of funny money. I'm talking about the Squid Game fad, right? Like, that's a fad. That's a thing that people are into. And I'm just asking you, the person that looked up and was like, yo, this Squid Game thing is popping. We should sell an NFT off of that. Does that sound to you like something somebody in the finance world thought up? Or does that sound to you like something that a con man came up with? Because that sounds to me like something that a con man, because Gabe, was it even, it's not even NFT, right? Like, it's just a new cryptocurrency. It's a coin. Yeah, it's a coin. This is so obviously a scam. They hadn't thought about this a month ago. I imagine, you tell me if I'm wrong, because if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm giving y'all credit about this funny money. I imagine it takes some time to come up with a coin and everything that goes along with it, right? To get you ready to roll that thing out. That ain't something you could just come up with like that. This seems like something that they came up with like that. And people bought it. Your dumbass. I ain't blaming the funny money. I'm blaming the people who cop the funny money. I'm sorry. It's one thing when somebody lies to you. It's another thing when they like, you know, we lying, right? Oh, you don't? Well, okay. Guess that's how it goes.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So topic for the voicemails this week. Biggest lie that people have heard, have participated in keeping it alive, a la Aaron Rodgers. Had a bunch of interesting ones. What I thought was funny was they all somehow revolved around college.
Yeah, because this was a teenage type of lie. Are you vaccinated? Yeah, maybe not. What? Like, not one person was like, hold up, dog, I ain't asked you that.
Here's our first. The guy didn't leave his name or where he's from, but here it is.
I went to college with this dude, D. He was a buddy from high school. We had known each other since elementary school. We were good. Everything's great. We moved in together sophomore year, and our house, for lack of a better term, was the party house, and we all kind of knew that in college you can do two out of these three things well. You choose your two, between sleeping, partying, and studying. I chose partying and studying. D, he chose sleeping and partying. Thing is, he didn't tell his parents that. So, he's telling his parents that he's going to school and everything's going well. They're sending tuition checks. All bad. So, after we throw all these parties with his tuition checks and his rent checks his parents are giving him, you know, they find out because the insurance company dropped dime on him when they didn't get his enrollment status. Next thing you know, I wake up to them screaming at him at 7 a.m. I didn't see him again until my 10-year reunion. Appreciate you, Bo.
Yo, how did he think he was going to get away with this? That's what I'm left with when I hear a story like that. So how did you think you were going to get away with that? Like, at some point, you weren't going to have a degree.
The insurance angle kind of intrigued me. Why were the insurance people coming for him on the tuition?
That's a fair question. I don't quite. Oh, you know what it might be? They might have been getting like some discount on the basis of him being in school or something like that. And then there was no documentation of him being in school.
Didn't have a thought in his head that somehow there was going to be a receipt on the back end.
Yeah, this plan was not thought out. All he knew was, I can't tell my parents I'm not in school anymore.
This one is a really funny one. Didn't leave his name or where he's from, but here it is.
The biggest lie that I've ever heard that was kept up for a long period of time was this guy who said he hooped at Michigan State. Now, I believed him because I didn't know dude. I didn't go to Michigan State. I went to Mizzou. Had a couple of people that was with dude. Was like, yeah, that's what he told us too. 3 years down the line, come to find out, when he says he hooped at Michigan State, he didn't actually play for Tom Izzo and the rest of the Michigan State Spartans. Hooping at Michigan State, he meant I was at the Student Rec Center playing basketball. Come to find out, not only did he not actually go to Michigan State, he went to a community college in East Lansing. And he was just there while his homeboy was taking classes at Michigan State, who was an actual student. He was like, yeah, I hooped at Michigan State. I was with the Flintstones, Mo Pete, all of them. I even hooped a little bit with Plaxico Burress. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, when somebody spilled the beans that he wasn't actually playing for Michigan State, we were like, oh, man, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Years go by, Drew was still telling the same tale. I hooped at Michigan State. Trying to get folks to believe he hooped for Michigan State when he was just hooping at Michigan State. One day, dude got busted by this chick at a club. It's like, you hooped at Michigan State? I hooped at Michigan State, too. I was on the girls' team. I don't remember you. Because he has very distinct features. She goes to her phone, pulls up her stats. It still says, here are my stats. Where are yours? Out loud. Dude could not come back. It was like, yeah, I was on the freshman team. She was like, we didn't have freshman team. Where were you? If you hooped at Michigan State, pull up your stats. Here are my stats. I pulled up mine. You even got my picture. Where's yours? You couldn't do it. Shortly after that, he stopped telling folks, I hooped at Michigan State. He was like, too old to be saying that. It's in the past. Whatever.
Yo, that preposition was going a long way. I hooped at Michigan State, Gabe. At.
Oh, gosh. It wasn't exactly my intention to make it so fitting to the Rodgers story, but it was the interpretation of the word, right? I hooped at Michigan State versus
yes.
I hooped for Michigan State, just like I'm immunized rather than yes. I'm vaccinated.
Yes. That dude played it wrong, though. He should have kept going. I told you I played at Michigan State, and just leave them confused and then walk away. Once he got into panic, like, no, y'all didn't listen to me. I said at.
All right, this last one, the guy's name is Cordes from the Bay.
I had a homie in high school who stayed lying about stuff. I don't know what it was. The dude stayed lying, not only to girls, but to his best friends. My homie said one time he had got an autographed Mike Vick jersey back in 2003. And was like, where'd you get it from? He was like, Mike Vick signed this himself. I swear to God. I'm from the Bay Area. My pick can't come to the Bay Area. You lying. But the biggest lie he told me was our senior year of high school. At this point, we driving now. This man got a Cadillac. I think it was a 1991 Cadillac. But he was like, hey, Corday, you know I got a Ferrari in my dad's house, right? I was like, what? For real? He's like, yeah. I was like, well, if you got it, why don't you drive it here? He's like, come on, man. You know how many people, how many girls be jumping on it. I'll have too much people jumping on my car. I can't have that happen. And I was like, huh, Ferrari, huh? But you love attention. He's like, not that much. I'm like, okay. Well, why are you driving a 1991 Cadillac that ain't souped up if you got a Ferrari at the house? Why your parents didn't buy you a brand new 2006 Cadillac? And he was like, do you know how much a Cadillac costs? I was like, you know how much a Ferrari costs? If your parents balling like that, why don't they give you both? He was like, man, you don't even understand. I was like, yeah, I don't understand no lies. I'm going to tell you that.
I've heard a lot of amazing lies. That's up there.
Do you know how much a Cadillac costs?
Yeah. You know what the answer to know how much a Ferrari costs is? No, I don't. And that's the point. Like you go to the Ferrari website, they don't have like starting from listed on there. You know what I'm saying? They're not trying to make you think you're getting a deal. That's not where that's coming from. No, there is a base model. They just not even telling you the price of that. I don't even know why Ferrari got a website, keep it real. Like the plebes are not showing up to get no Ferrari. I'm trying to think the best lie I heard somebody tell in college. God knows I heard plenty. I think I've told you the story about the dude who claimed that he dunked on somebody and the dude got mad and came back and shot up the court. And then after he shot up the court, the dude put a gun to his head. And then he said he just went psh, and walked away. And we asked him what kind of gun it was. And he said it was an AK-47. But that same guy tried to tell us once that he was riding a jet ski and he was jumping off ramps on the jet ski. Or he just saw something he thought was a ramp. So he decided to bounce off of it. It's 1997. And so he bounced off of it. And people were like, oh, wow. And he said he realized it wasn't a ramp. He said he realized it was a manatee. This is when the manatees was going extinct. This is when they thought it was like five manatees left. He told us not only did he hit a manatee with a jet ski, but he went flying away and landed and didn't drown. That man would be out here telling us anything, dog. Anything. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Gabe Bassain handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thank you to Stephanie Wash of ABC News. Check out her story on the chaos surrounding the Travis Scott concert. Thanks to Matthew Wolf of ABC Audio. Check out his story about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction night. And thank you to Steven Iervolino. Check out his story on the Squid Game CryptoCon at ABC News. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.